the most self-taught people I know are the happiest, because they did what they wanted. There wasn't like a path that they thought they had to go on. It was just whatever they wanted to do.
Well, it's another awesome week, another great guest, and another opportunity for me to bring you value through someone else's story. But before we jump into that, I'm just so excited that episode 100 is coming up, and it's going to be amazing. If you know about episode 50, I did a 9-hour live stream with about 12 guests. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to do something similar to that again. So to learn more, go to passionbehindtheart.com/100. That's passionbehindtheart.com/100. Episode 100. It's coming and I'm so excited about it. Remember, subscribe. Leave a review on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on TuneIn Radio. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Stitcher. That's passionbehindtheart.com to learn about everything that we are doing and what's going on with the podcast and what's the next moves. So without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Well, I am excited to have Titus Smith on the Passion Behind the Art show, ESPN senior designer. I'm super happy to have you on, man.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Cool. Let's do it. So let's jump right into it. How did your journey start into design?
I started, I guess, after graduating from college with a history degree, I started working in the music business. And so I was in Nashville booking bands, shows around America, and did not do a very good job. Basically got told by my boss, like, you need to learn how to do something else. And he was very generous. He saw how badly I wanted to stay, you know, like in that industry, and just encouraged me to look at some other things. And I had, I guess, picked up Photoshop, you know, like anybody else does, and learned a little bit of how to use it. You know, it's funny when we use Photoshop now, if you've used it for a while, if you're a seasoned designer, you know how layers work, right? But the first time you open Photoshop, you just assume like you just draw, you know, like Microsoft Paint, like. So if you can think back to like the first time that you ever opened up Photoshop and tried to use like the paintbrush tool, that's basically the skill level that I was at. People encouraged me and got heavily into, you know, online tutorials and trying to figure out through YouTube and stuff back in, this was like 2009, 2010, just teaching myself and getting into, I don't know, whatever freelance work right. I could find. So we would have musicians and bands come through who we were booking shows for and mention that they needed like merchandise or, you know, posters or even album artwork. And I would always say I could do that. And I never really knew what I was doing. I just knew what looked good, and I assumed that I could figure it out, which was not really true, I guess. But for right. whatever reason, you know, because I was extremely cheap or because they didn't know anybody else, like, people would hire me, and I did what we all do, is we practice and we get better, right? So I freelanced for a long time, bounced around at some other different jobs, and in 2015, I was hired at ESPN. So I've been there for almost, I guess, going on 4 years. Yeah.
Okay, cool, cool. So how did that transition, how did that come about? Did you just straight up went and applied? How did that?
Yeah, I think it's not as magical as people might want it to be, you know, like this long process. Working at ESPN is great, and I love my job, but it was simple. It was like a post online that I saw, and I thought, hiring product designers. I thought I could do that. And interviewed for this product design job. And while I was interviewing, they sent me through all over campus, like, hey, you should meet with this person, this person, this person. And I got to meet people from print and from digital and from TV. And I don't know if they knew that they weren't going to hire me or what, but they introduced me to enough people during that interview process that when I ultimately did not get that job, it was kind of lost in a big reorg and they weren't able to hire me. They said, well, you know, we'll keep your name handy. And sure enough, a couple months later, somebody else from the company remembered me and said, oh, that guy could actually do, you know, illustration work. We need someone that can do some more, I guess, like illustration type stuff, whether it be art direction or thinking more in terms of like branding. At the time, ESPN was doing a lot of like custom brands for their digital stuff. We don't really do that anymore. So I was hired to do a lot of things that I don't even do anymore. So I had to learn a lot and kind of evolve, you know, with the position. But it wasn't like this long, it was a long process, but it wasn't like a, I don't know, some sort of destiny moment, you know. It was just I was looking for an in-house job somewhere and this place was hiring, and I was very you know, grateful and blessed, I guess, to have made that cut.
All right, that's cool. I got a couple more questions that have arise through that yeah. little story. So first, like, did you go to school for design or
no,
did you go for something else?
No, I went to a small private Christian school in West Tennessee and did not know that design was a thing, right? Mm-hmm. I just assumed that designers were also, you know, people like the guys and girls that I grew up around, like farmers and plumbers and pipe fitters. Like I remember growing up thinking, I want to draw cartoons. So I've always wanted to do something artsy. Right. I would read Calvin and Hobbes and think, man, this is beautiful. I want to make a cartoon strip when I grow up. But I'll only be able to do that at night, right? Because I'm sure the guy who makes Calvin and Hobbes is probably also like a carpenter during the day. Like, you don't get paid to draw.
Right.
So I studied history just because I liked history. I'm a terrible example when people ask me, like, oh, how did you come about this line of work? Like, I didn't even want to be a teacher. I just liked history, so I studied history. And that was like, if I was a historian now, I would still tell people, like, don't do what I did. I'm a terrible example. I just enjoyed it, so I studied it. I'd never thought that I would use it. And I guess I haven't, but I'm a terrible example. Don't do what I did.
That's interesting, because I feel like that will help a lot of people that, you know, because there's a lot of self-taught designers out there.
Sure.
There's a lot. And, you know, that will kind of, your story will kind of help them if they feel like everything's not going the way they would like it to go, or if they hit a roadblock, or if they're even just worrying that, okay, I don't have a degree, maybe I can't get a job in design.
Yeah, maybe so. I think that if you're talented and if you really enjoy something, you ought to do that thing. And usually nothing holds you back, right? Speaking very generally, if you are really bad at something and you think that you still want to do that thing, sometimes people don't realize that they shouldn't be artists, right? I know people that go to school for art, have graduated with degrees in art, and are really struggling to make it. And I wish that someone would have grabbed them before they got into art school and said, why don't you try something else? Or do you really want to do this? Because you're right. A lot of people are self-taught. In fact, I would say the most self-taught people I know are the happiest because they did what they wanted. There wasn't like a path that they thought they had to go on. It was just whatever they wanted to do. And that crosses over through any sort of career, not just art, but like even one of my best buddies is a lawyer, and he just passed the bar. He's like in his 40s, and he wanted to be a lawyer his whole life and finally just buckled down and did it. You know, there's no real path to anything unless, I don't know, unless you're very lucky, right? Unless things are just line up very well for you.
All the stars align.
Sure.
But that's cool, man. So are you even a sports fan?
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge sports fan. Before ESPN, hired me, I probably watched ESPN 2 or 3 hours a day, or listened to it on the radio. So I'm a huge sports fan. I'm from Kansas City area, so I'm a big Jayhawks fan. Right now is my time of the year when they're playing basketball, because football is not the game.
It's another story.
I'm a big Royals fan. It's been a couple of years since I moved up here to be a Royals fan, and I'm a big Chiefs fan. So as much as I love sports, I actually did not watch the Super Bowl out of protest because I'm such a big Chiefs fan and I absolutely hate the Patriots. So I'm living in the wrong part of the world right now. But
oh, gosh.
Yeah, well, you've got to be a sports fan.
Well, bro, I'm about to tell you something, and then you will completely understand. I'm a Jets fan, so you know how I feel about the Patriots. You know how I feel.
I'm sorry. The Jets have had a lot of unlucky years now.
Yeah, man. I'm hoping we finally kind of go in the right direction. We got a lot of money, and we got a decent prospect in the quarterback.
Yeah,
right,
that young
now.
Quarterback. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so. Hopefully, things will turn for us.
Well, man, I will root for anybody against the Patriots. So, at least twice a year, I'm a Jets fan for sure.
Oh, my gosh, man, I'm telling you. And they won, unfortunately.
Yeah, whatever, man. I went to bed early. I woke up at some point and saw the score at halftime. And it was 3-3, and I was so happy that I didn't watch it. What a miserable game.
Oh, gosh, that is hilarious. That is hilarious.
I need to calm down.
Well, man, trust me, I totally understand. You know, when us sports fans get together, it kind of gets pretty intense talking about sports.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny how sports is very polarizing around designers. Like all day today, I was looking at Twitter the day after the Super Bowl and reading a lot of stuff online about, man, I'm glad I don't think sports validate me anymore. You know, I'm so glad that I don't care about sports. How awful would it be to have stayed up all night and watched that game and all that stuff? Like, I don't know. I think sports are great. I think they're a lot of fun. I think they teach a lot of really great life lessons. And if that's not your thing, that's cool too. But it seems to be in the design community, you're really into it for like 100%. You've got a team.
you're
dedicated.
Not at all.
You're not a casual sports fan if you're a designer.
Right.
I don't know why that is. It's just
that is so true. Now that you bring it up, that is so true. It's like complete polar opposites. You're never like in the middle. It's like no sports at all or a complete sports fan.
Yeah, I think so. That's my observation anyway. And I'm sure I'm just more sensitive to it working, you know, in a sports company.
So what was it like at Bristol when the whole Knicks trade went down? What was it like at ESPN that day?
So I cannot speak to that. I was actually at Walt Disney World last week. I took my sisters. It was their birthday. They'd never been. One of the perks of working for Disney is getting to go to Walt Disney World and have some free tickets every year. And so I took my sisters and celebrated their birthdays and my wife's son, and we were having a great time. I checked my phone. I forget what day it was, and saw, you know, breaking news, Porzingis traded, and had no clue that that was going to happen. I don't know if anybody at work
knew. Just me, I'm a Knicks fan. Nobody knew.
Man, I jumped on Slack and started talking to people, and the feeling I got was that it was just total chaos and shock, you know? And that kind of stuff happens a lot. So maybe not that time. I can't really tell a story about when the Knicks, you know, traded their best player. but that stuff happens a lot, and it is chaos. The people will be running down the halls. All of a sudden, designers who work for the social team that are in charge of, like, what they call jersey swaps, where they'll take a player and just put him in jersey. They have to just go to town as fast as they can, and it's almost stuff that you have to do preemptively, right? Like, just maybe you know, LeBron will get traded to Milwaukee someday, so let's go ahead and put him in a Milwaukee jersey. Like, sometimes you just gotta plan ahead and have no idea, and 90% of that stuff will never get used. But it can be pretty hectic.
So what was like the, like, speaking to that that we're just talking about, like, what would you say was like one of the most chaotic day, something happening in a sports world while you were at work?
That's a great question. There have been a couple of tight deadlines that I've been on, and they were very, very pivotal, like, you know, a crazy announcement where something that we don't anticipate happens, whether it's an athlete getting injured. There have been a couple of times when athletes have gotten hurt, like in NFL training camp the day before we're going to publish a big piece on the best players in the NFL. And all of a sudden, because number, you know, 10 gets hurt, numbers 11 through 50 all shift up one, and we have to add somebody somewhere at the very end. Like, it's it can be very hectic in that sense.
Okay.
There have been some crazy trades. I remember the Jimmy Butler trade was a big one on draft night that people didn't expect. The tournament, March Madness is always pretty crazy. It's a fun time, especially as a college basketball fan, but there's a lot of moments where you want to watch, you know, 60 games. Like, you just want to enjoy the day. But by the way, we have to crank out all these graphics because the tournament is constantly changing with every single game. So, we have to be nimble for sure.
Wow. That gotta be crazy. I never really thought about it like from that aspect, but now that I think about it, there's so much changing. And really, ESPN is like the leader in sports news, period. So I'm figuring, like, the minute something changes, you guys are expected to kind of be the first to kind of put it out there.
Yeah, I am not a social designer. The social team at ESPN is huge and very talented, and they have a lot of really great designer team. And another guy used to work for our team, content design, he went over to their team a couple months ago. And he is super talented at that stuff. And they got an awesome ad to their team. His name's Mike. And Mike will crank out those jersey swaps, or, he'll make a player look however you want him to look, like in 30 minutes. He's a master at that stuff. And I have never been good at it. I honestly don't care to be good at it. But his talent is off the chains. It's always impressive to me when somebody can make something that, you know, 1.5 million people will see or like or share, and to do it, you know, within 10 minutes of news breaking, like, and to deal with, you know, fans too, right? Like, people are going to hate it. People are going to love it. People are going to print it out and put it on their wall. People are going to burn it. Like, it's a lot of pressure. And some of the people that do that stuff, it's amazing to me.
That's awesome. So what would you say was the hardest struggle for Titus that he had to overcome through his creative journey?
I think it has to do with my, I guess, kind of coming up story. I just feel like I'm a late starter. Because I didn't know design was a thing, I am constantly second guessing myself. Should I have, should I have looked at that type a little bit closer? Should I have known that those colors didn't go together? Should I have known, all these rules, the things that I picked up, things that I just have to remember as I get older. And I don't know if you can teach old dogs new tricks, but I am really bad at staying on top of trends. That's probably my biggest struggle, I think, is just keeping up with everybody else.
So who would you say were kind of the people that kind of encouraged you, like your support system during this?
I didn't ever have like one mentor or an instructor or a teacher, having not gone through any sort of design program. But the people that I have met through conferences and the people that I have hung around with at design events have always been heavily influential to me. I've got a group of guys that we get together every year and hang out, and it's a guy, Ben Stafford, who's been on the show, and Andrew Hockrattle, who's been on the show. They're both in that group of, I guess there's 11 of us. They call it 2 Cents, and it's just a Slack channel, and we have connected over the years. Whenever we have a project that we're working on, we can kick it into one of those channels and say, hey, I need some feedback. Can someone critique this for me? Or if, personal stuff comes up, hey, I'm looking for a new job. I'm really stressed out. What do you guys do in these situations? Whenever we, since I've joined that group, I've had a baby. Another one of our guys has had a baby, and we just found out that two of the others are pregnant. So like finding that community, I think, has been super helpful, because all of the stuff that I missed out on in design school, I guess, learning and kind of growing closer to like-minded people, you know, instead of just, I've got a lot of friends who don't understand design and don't care to understand it. And that's fine. And that's healthy. But to have a group of like-minded friends has been super encouraging for sure.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Totally there with you. And especially when you go from just being like-minded to being able to talk about just regular life. I think that's when you know that you and you, that group goes to another level.
Yeah, for sure. It's very conversational, and that's something I appreciate. My wife is a nurse practitioner, and she will come home and want to talk about crazy stuff. You know, this kid came in and I had to perform this procedure, or, you know, I had to go to a C-section or whatever, and I have to leave the room. Like, I'm squeamish enough. Like, I don't need to know about this crazy day that you had. And I'm sure it's that way for my friends whenever I say, oh, I hate that logo or whatever. I'm sure it's just as bad. Like, can we change the subject? Can we talk about something else? So yeah, to have some guys or some girls that you can just kind of casually go in and out of that type of stuff in conversation is super amazing.
That's cool. That's cool. So what is that thing that Titus can't live without that's not as fun?
Chapstick. Man, it's been like single digits up here in Connecticut the past month. You know, 10 inches of snow on the ground. Everybody in the Midwest knows about that polar vortex that went through. I wake up some nights and feel like my lips have been roasting over a fire. And I don't answer this question lightly. Chapstick.
Dude, I can totally attest to that, because I actually grew up in New York, okay, right? And my mom worked in Darien.
Okay.
Yeah, and trust me, I visited Darien a lot. And bro, I totally agree with
Chapstick's
you.
Chapstick's where it's at.
Oh, that's funny. So what is the first hour of your day like?
I think the first hour is pretty consistent as far as when I get to work. I've got a 16-month-old at home, and my wife, her schedule is kind of crazy. She works 12-hour shifts, and the days are never the same each week. So half the time, you know, I'm helping him get ready. Half the time, I'm getting him ready by myself. And so getting to work months has been a challenge. But once I get there, the first hour of my day is pretty much the same, I guess. You drop off your bag, you grab a cup of coffee, sit down, and I always make a list. It's like the first thing I'll do in the day, kind of decide what the priorities are. Mm. Sometimes when I want to feel good about what I'm doing, I will write down, like, make a list. And once I make the list, I can cross that off of the list and make myself feel like I've actually accomplished something, which sounds silly, but is actually like a very motivational trick, like a little tip for you guys. After I make a list, I usually look at the calendar, make sure that I don't have anything pressing that I need to jump on right away in the morning and prioritize. We work in a very open environment, so people walk by all the time and just assume that you're not busy and want to stop by and talk, and that can be super distracting. And I'm guilty of it too, but trying to sneak in some extra time, getting to work early, that kind of stuff has been helpful. Go through the calendar, look at emails. There's always half a dozen emails in the morning that I got to look at or answer. And then after I get in about nine, between 8 and 9 every day. And after that first hour, the day is mine. You know, it's pretty smooth sailing usually through the rest of the day.
No, that's cool. That's cool. And that list, and being able to check something off, you're not the only person that I've interviewed that has said that. Like, a few people have said that. Like, being able to check something off a list makes you feel like you've accomplished something throughout the day.
Yeah, and it's helpful to look back, and just for me, as forgetful as I am, to keep track of what I'm doing, I'm always impressed when people remember,
right,
hey, didn't you say you were going to do that? It's like, well, I didn't. I don't remember saying that, but I'm sure I did. that. It's it keeps you accountable is what it does.
That's cool. That's cool. Book recommendations.
Let's see, book recommendations. I have been on a reading kick the past few months. One of my resolutions this year was to read a book every, I think 3 was my goal. And I started that early. I'm really glad I did because I've been able to read some really great books. And I listened to them on the way to work. The commute is about 25, 30 minutes. And if I can read an hour a day in the car, you know, when otherwise I wouldn't be doing anything. It's really helpful. I just finished a few. It doesn't have to be crazy at work. Written by the Basecamp guys. It's really short. It's written kind of segmented. So they have like just a ton of tips and they go through really quickly. That was a really good book. A while back, I read a couple of Seth Godin books that were really good. I think Leap First was one of them. The Dip was another one. Okay. And again, audiobooks, man, those are only like an hour and a half each. So you can get through, you know, 2 books in a week if you really commit.
True.
The physical books that I've read lately have been really helpful. The Hood Sisters, you know them, they have that book, Freelance and Business and stuff.
Yep.
That should be mandatory reading for any new artist or new designer who's either going to go out on their own or haven't taken a business class before. It is super helpful.
Right.
Another one that I read and worked on was The Full-Time You book by Meg Lewis. That book was incredible. And I have been buying that from friends and telling everybody to get that book. It was super clarifying for me to kind of pinpoint what I want to do with my career versus just, you know, be a good designer. So I would recommend that workbook for sure. And Meg's incredible. She is so super talented. And it takes a very special person, I think, to write a book about how to love yourself and objectively, like, understand your purpose and your gift. And she was the person to write that book for sure. And then the one book I just finished was David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell.
Mm.
And that was an awesome book. That was recommended to me from Micah Smith, who is a buddy of mine. We had breakfast one morning over the holidays and we were talking about books and he stopped me and was like, you have to read this book. This is really great. And he was right. It's one of my favorite books I've read.
Nice. Those are some pretty cool recommendations.
That's a lot. I know that's more than what you asked.
Nah, that's great, man. Like I said, that is great. That's great. And it's funny you brought up the Hood Sisters. Me and Amy were going back and forth not too long ago on Twitter because she's a Laker fan and I was giving her grief because she was a Laker fan.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of Laker fans right now. Seem to have become fans just recently.
Yes. I can tell you a few. I got a few right now. I got a few right now in my head. Somebody on my Instagram feed said I'm a Laker fan now. So, yeah, there are a few out there. A lot of them came because of LeBron.
Yeah, and I think they'll get a few more if AD heads over there soon.
Oh, my goodness. Ah. The struggle is real, man. Do you have any NBA teams that you like?
You know, the closest team in Kansas City was the Thunder. As a Jayhawk fan, Nick Collison was my guy.
Nice, yes.
He's the man, and so they're going to retire his number. And so I respect that team. I love Stephen Adams. That's such a fun franchise for me to root for, but. If I'm being honest, I enjoy the NBA players probably more than I do any franchises.
Right.
Just watching these guys kind of get the best of each other. LeBron's the greatest athlete, I think, ever. And Joel Embiid is the funniest
this dude like
court presence ever.
He's a super troll, man.
Oh, I love it. He's my spirit animal. So I bounce around when there's a good game on. I remember over Christmas Day, there were like 4 awesome games on. And that was a great present just to sit down and watch, you know, people that you never get to watch, like in right. real life, like Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like,
nice.
What a talented dude. I love all of the NBA players more than one team anymore.
That's cool. I like how you killed that pronunciation, though.
Man, I'm very proud of that, actually. I'm around it all the time. You have to learn, when you work at ESPN, one of the requirements to get in should be to pronounce the Greek freak's last name.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so what is next for Titus?
That's a good question. I don't think too far ahead. I'm really bad at planning stuff anymore, especially being a newish dad. But one of the goals is I want to bring back Permanent Records, which is a side project me and Seth Gale, one of my buddies, put out every single year. We've done a couple. Last year we skipped because one of us had a baby and the other person moved and started a couple of different jobs. So the goal is to bring that back. Me and Seth have been talking about it. I'm really excited about the idea of doing that soon. So permanent-records.co is that website, which is a lot of fun. I've got a big March Madness project going on that I'm in the middle of wireframing for. I'm really excited about that. That'll go out right before the tournament starts. So you'll have to check that out. Nice. I'm looking for some new conferences to go to just to check out. I've gone to the same ones quite a bit, and I want to branch out a little bit and check out some stuff. I'm also trying to speak at some of those things, and I'm bouncing around to the different events and different colleges around here trying to speak and present and share and see if I can't help some of these guys and girls who, I don't know, I wish I could have been, right? To go to design school would have been just unreal. But I'm trying to get plugged in that scene a little bit. And I think that's a lot. That's enough, you know.
Yeah. So what conferences have you been to so far?
Man, I went to one. The first conference I ever went to was called Plywood Presents in Atlanta. And that was a really cool conference. And my buddy Brad Montague took me, just kind of treated me to that. And I'll never forget how encouraging that was for him to kind of find an interest in me and take me along with him. And that was a really good conference that kind of got me into the idea of connecting with these people. When I lived in Memphis, Creative Works started, and that was just kind of perfect timing for me getting into more design and more illustration, and then conference showing up just kind of randomly in the same city I was living in. And that first year that they had it was like my design Mount Rushmore. You know, it was Invisible Creature and Aaron Draplin and Clark Orr and Brandon Wright,
nice,
Matt Lehman. So I ate that up, and I have been back a few times since then. I went to Creative South last year for the first time, and that was a good time.
Okay, cool.
I might hit that one up again someday. A couple other ones. I think I've been to Icon once, and I feel like there's some more, but I really I know there's a lot of really good ones out there, and I just feel like I need to branch out a little bit.
That's cool. I've only been to Creative South. I've never been to any other ones.
Yeah, you like that one?
I actually love
it. It's a good time.
Yeah, I love it. I just like the kind of just the more, I think it's more built around just kind of being able to just hang out with everybody.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate that about a conference that creates opportunities for you to get to know other people. Right. All the 2 Cents guys that I mentioned earlier last year, like I said, we get together every year and head out to where one of us lives and kind of explore the area. This past year, we piggybacked off of Creative South and just got a cabin in some, Podunk, Alabama town, and hung out for a week and fished and did all sorts of really fun stuff.
Nice.
So Creative South was a good opportunity for sure. Hopefully more people will go to conferences.
Yeah, I'm down with you. We did something like that towards the end of last year. A group of guys, most of them were from Creative South. We did that toward the end of last year. We went to Tennessee, Franklin, Tennessee.
Oh, awesome. I love Franklin.
Yes, it's super nice over there.
Yeah.
Like, that was my first time.
If I ever move back down to the South, Nashville would be the one stop. Everywhere else just kind of got ruined for me when I lived there. But that part of the country is just beautiful.
Nice. Well, dude, man, I really appreciate you doing this. This has been awesome. Where can people go to find out about you, learn more about what you're doing?
Sure. You can hit me up, I guess, on social media. It's Titus Smith with one S, and then my website is titussmith.com, TitusSmith. Give me a shout. I'm happy to meet more people, and I appreciate you having me on. This has been fun.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope it's been super valuable to you and you're now ready to take your audience building, your community growing to the next level to help you and help me build our empire, for lack of a better word, or just to build our thing. Remember to stop by iTunes, Passion Behind the Art, and leave a review and subscribe. It's very important to me. It helps the podcast grow, and it makes me feel good to kind of hear from you guys, to know what you like about this podcast, what it's done for you. So jump on iTunes and subscribe and leave a review. Passion Behind the Art. Be blessed.